Unemployment claims rise again.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to The Morning Open. I'm Bill Radke. This morning, we learned the number of people filing new claims for jobless benefits rose again last week. Second time in a row, that number has disappointed. We're going to hear more about that in a moment. But first, 20 minutes into the trading day, where's Wall Street? Well, after yesterday's 100-point gain, the Dow has backed off a little bit, but still significantly above 11,000, down just 18 points at 11,105, and the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are holding steady. United Parcel Service is up almost 5%. UPS says that first quarter earnings are going to be a lot higher than they expected. And stocks in Asia rose today. China said its gross domestic product grew almost 12% last quarter compared to a year ago with relatively low inflation. And if that is true, that's the so-called Goldilocks scenario of growth. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. Always good to say good morning to Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. She's with us live from Chicago. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
So new unemployment claims rose last week by 24,000, highest level since late February. What happened to job growth?
You know, really was a disappointment. We did have some disruptions created by Easter and extended spring breaks, but when people are having to apply for unemployment insurance because people aren't showing up because they're off work and they're not showing up at their local restaurants, that is really not the best economy to have.
So where does that leave you in terms of your thinking about this recovery?
Well, I am agreeing with Ben Bernanke. I mean, we are seeing some lights out there. The economy is starting to show some signs of self-feeding momentum. But at the end of the day, we need jobs. And the jobs part of the recovery is the slowest part, and it's going to be a long time in coming. We'll see some more job growth in the month of April after some job growth in the month of March. But the operative word here is some and not enough.
Let's talk about a piece of that. This morning, Fortune magazine released its annual survey of the Fortune 500. They slashed 821,000 jobs last year, while their collective profit more than tripled. Must corporate jobs come back eventually, or are our biggest employers permanently leaner and meaner?
Well, you know, this has been an ongoing theme. Many of our bigger employers are permanently leaner and meaner, but they're outsourcing. And the good news is they are beginning to hire temporary hires and consultants. It's not the same kind of employment we had in the past, but this has been going on for more than 20 years as large corporations try to be more flexible by relying on consultants, the self-employed, and even large consulting firms. And so we are starting to see a tipping point where they're beginning to commit to hire. Even J.P. Morgan said they're going to hire again some 9,000 jobs after making a boatload of money in the last quarter. That's the good news. The bad news is large corporate America disappeared from being, you know, the parent it once was to us all and taking care of us all for some time in the 1990s.
Diane Swonk of Mesirow Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We learned this morning from the private firm Realty Track, the number of homes taken over by banks has jumped to a new record high. And Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson is here live. Hi, Jeremy.
Morning, Bill.
Why are these numbers still going up?
Well, it's those Sun Belt states that are dragging us down again. Your state of California accounted for 23% of the foreclosure filings in the first quarter. Arizona, Florida, Nevada also up there. But I spoke with Andrew Jakubowicz, a housing expert at the Center for American Progress. He says the bigger picture here is that new filings are not those pesky subprime mortgages. They're the more traditional prime mortgages, which he says means they're more tied to the employment picture.
The loans that are starting to go bad now are really much more linked to the economy, and unemployment obviously is a key driver there. 60% of people who are in permanent modifications indicated that loss of income was the key reason for their default.
And he says, Bill, the good news is not all of those homes that are getting foreclosure filings will end up being taken over by the bank.
But Jeremy, what about the help the government is giving to borrowers?
Well, that's right. The federal government has spent billions of dollars trying to get mortgages modified so people will have an easier time paying mortgages. But a lot of people who signed up for the programs dropped out either because they couldn't make their payments or because they failed to return the paperwork. So it appears it's not as easy to implement these programs in practice.
Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson in New York. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. This is the Morning Report for Thursday, April 15th at Marketplace.org. It has been a day and a half since another catastrophic earthquake in western China. The death toll exceeds 600. At least one hydroelectric dam, a critical source of power in that region, was heavily damaged. And scientists and outside groups are raising questions today about the quality of the Chinese dam industry in general, an industry that has gone global. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from Shanghai.
Chinese state media report the dam was cracked by the quake and faces risk of collapse. Rescuers are now patching it, and water is being released to ease pressure. The rescue effort has some Chinese geologists wondering if the dam was built to high enough safety standards, or if dam builders cut corners. Outside groups like International Rivers have expressed concern for years. Peter Bassard is policy director.
Dams in China, and particularly the older dams, have a very bad safety record. Thousands of smaller dams have collapsed.
Sometimes, he says, dam operators don't pay enough attention to nearby seismic activity.
Monitoring is not as thorough as it should be. Often they try to wiggle out of this responsibility.
China has half of the world's biggest dams. It produces more hydropower than anyone else, and it's exporting its dam building. Bassard's group estimates that Chinese firms are building or financing more than 200 projects in 49 countries. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
In northern Europe, hundreds of airline flights have been canceled this morning by a giant cloud of ash after a volcano erupted in Iceland. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard is with us live from London. Stephen, what is the latest?
British, Irish and Scandinavian airspace is now closed. That's no commercial flights in or out of these countries at all until at least 6 p.m. local time tonight. UK airspace is among the busiest in Europe, 6,000 flights a day, including overflights. So this is causing massive disruption.
And Stephen, is it just that this ash makes a visibility problem?
No. In fact, the biggest threat, it says Marcus Pilling of Airline Business Management magazine, is that the ash will clog up a plane's engines.
It is about the danger of the, you know, the substances, the dust particles, anything else that's in the cloud itself being ingested into engines and causing them to fail.
Over the past three decades, around 90 aircraft have been damaged in this way, none with fatal consequences, but the danger is very real.
And Stephen, can you tell how long today we're going to see flights disrupted like this?
Well, it's impossible to say with absolute certainty. Of course, the airspace is expected to be opened again at 6 o'clock. The cloud is expected to pass out of UK airspace early this afternoon. But there is the danger of another cloud coming this way. The volcano in Iceland is still erupting.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard reporting on the cloud. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
The last sardine cans to say made in the USA are rolling off the assembly line this week. Reporter Jill Barchet tells us that Bumblebee is shutting down America's sole remaining sardine cannery.
Two things helped kill the American sardine industry: canned tuna and overfishing. Tuna fish replaced sardines in the lunch bag, cutting demand at home. Overfishing has led to tighter fishing restrictions. Fishermen can't catch enough in U.S. waters to supply canned sardines on a large enough scale. Ronnie Peabody is the president of the Maine Coast Sardine History Museum. He says Bumblebee's already had to ship in fish from its cannery in Canada.
They can put out as many sardines as Bumblebee needs. They don't need this plant.
Maine claims it was once the sardine capital of the world. The industry employed entire communities along the Maine coast.
It is very sad. To me, very sad, because there'll never be another Maine sardine ever.
128 people are expected to lose their jobs. I'm Jill Barchet from Marketplace.
If you want to take home a six-pack of beer in Pennsylvania, you have two sobering choices. Pay a hefty markup in a bar or restaurant, or pick up a full case from a wholesaler. But one lawmaker wants to open the tap for six-pack sales, as Joel Rose tells us.
Prohibition ended in the rest of the country almost 80 years ago, but in Pennsylvania, you still can't buy liquor, wine, or beer in convenience stores or even grocery stores. So it's a little weird to walk into the prepared food section at Wegmans supermarket in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and find a bar with wooden stools, flat-screen TVs, even chatty bartenders. Laura Demetrio is having a drink after work.
If you look around, you feel like you're in a bar. You don't feel like you're in a grocery store.
Technically, you're not. Wegmans also has a restaurant, which is why it's allowed to sell alcohol. Store manager Blaine Forkel says Wegmans has been selling beer to go in Pennsylvania for more than a year.
Our customers have overwhelmingly told us that they enjoy the choice of being able to make a purchase and not have to buy a full case of product.
And Wegmans may be just the beginning.
All I can say is free my beer.
At a raucous news conference in February, State Senator John Rafferty announced a bill that would allow grocery and convenience stores to sell six-packs.
Consumer-friendly. That's what we're trying to do.
But Rafferty is running into bitter opposition from Pennsylvania's 1,300 licensed beer stores, which are only allowed to sell by the case.
3280, please.
Steve Benko owns Doc's World of Beer in Philadelphia. He's worried about what reformed beer laws would mean for him and his six employees. And Benko warns that they could lead to more underage drinking.
If I get fined, it's my tail. I'm responsible for watching underage drinking. If it goes into grocery stores or convenience stores, I'm not sure that person behind the counter really cares about who's buying the beer.
Even if the beer bill does pass, Pennsylvania would still have some of the toughest liquor laws in the country. If you want to buy wine or hard stuff, state stores are your only option. In Philadelphia, I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
When the health care overhaul takes full effect in a few years, millions of new people will join the ranks of the insured. And there is a good chance there won't be enough primary care doctors to care for them all, at least not at first. Which is why it might be a good time to get to know your neighborhood pharmacist. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Carrie Grenz reports.
Pharmacists are doing more than dispensing pills these days. They're getting involved in treating and managing diseases.
Well, it's actually not a new idea. The thing that's new about it is the potential for reimbursement.
Jen Reinhold is a pharmacist and professor at the Philadelphia College of Pharmacy. She says several studies have shown that a pharmacist's involvement with patients improves their health and saves money. Insurance companies took notice. UnitedHealth announced this week it will pay Walgreens pharmacists to serve as healthcare coaches. Sharon Dunn, a director of product development at Walgreens, says pharmacists will get extra clinical training for the program.
We are actually using dedicated pharmacists for this program as healthcare coaches. So we're not asking them to fill scripts behind the counter and then in their free time have one-on-one face-to-face sessions with patients.
Pharmacy coaches are not common at retail pharmacies just yet. That's because reimbursement isn't yet common either. In Philadelphia, I'm Carrie Grenz for Marketplace.
Finally, the Library of Congress says it will archive the collected works of Twitter. The library says most of our history's been written by elites, whereas Twitter comes from real people. So, for example, I'm on Twitter right now and somebody writes, quote, 20 years later, I still wish Tom would catch Jerry already, 4 exclamation marks. So if you ever want to refer to that quote again, you can, because it's in the Library of Congress. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.